Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
May 1st. Yeah, it's May Day, but it's also a deadline. What's it a deadline for? That is the date by which people who are headed to college or graduate school for the first time need to plunk down their money. So I thought it'd be a particularly good time to do one of our switch sides in the middle debates on the question of, is college and graduate school still worth it in an era when so many more people have degrees? Is it still the edge in the marketplace? Is there the amount of learning that justifies the time and money? And to make sure we're fair, what we do is we have a debate. And I have a debate with my usual debate partner, a really strong debater and smart and well-positioned. She is the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, four-time national award-winning superintendent of schools, and my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko. And welcome, first of all, Barbara.
Thank you. Good morning.
And the way we do these switch sides in the middle debates to try to really ensure fairness, which is an obsession of mine, for the first part of the, we take turns. I start out being taking one side of the debate, and then in the middle, and Barbara takes the other side. Like I'll set to start, maybe Barbara will start with all the advantages, the pros, the advantages of going to college or graduate school, and I'll say the disadvantages. Then we'll switch sides, and I'll take the other side. That way, you're getting to hear not who's the better debater, or making a judgment based on who you think the better debater is, but which side you think has more valid arguments. And anything else you want to say before we launch in?
Nope.
Barbie, why don't you want to start with what you see as the pros of going to college?
I think one of the most important advantages is not the stuff that you study, but the people that you meet. In general, you are meeting a smart group of people who are motivated, who will probably do well in life, and those friendships can last because of the common experiences that you have, even if it's only sitting in a class, but also so many extracurricular activities which deal with your own interests. You select them, you choose them, and you meet people who have the same likes and interests as you do. So that's a wonderful way to have lifetime friendships begin. I think going to college exposes you to so much that you wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to get exposed to. For example, my parents were theater people, sort of. I mean, that was the one entertainment that they were interested in, but not music. So I was never exposed to classical music until I got to college, and I loved it. Now, why did I love it so much? Partly because the music is wonderful, and the more you listen to it and the more familiar you are with it, the better you understand it and appreciate it. And also because I met this guy, and he was a music major, and so he wanted to teach me lots of things about music, and I wanted to flirt with him. So I learned a lot about music in the bargain, and that knowledge has always stayed with me, as well as the love of music. So that never would have happened otherwise. Certainly, you will, I think they still have required courses, and they'll make you read a little bit of philosophy, which I had no understanding, familiarity with, and would not have had. And reading the kinds of books that you read in college, which are generally not the stuff that's on the bestseller list, brings you to a world of universal issues, greed, envy, and you learn a lot about history. So I think that you honestly get exposed to a very wide world of information, knowledge, understanding that you wouldn't have if you didn't go to college. Then there's the issue that there are still some employers who will not not necessarily not hire you, but won't promote you if you don't have a college degree. And sometimes these days it's more than a college degree, it's a master's degree, so you're not getting that if you don't go to college. And depending on the college that you go to, you may, number one, help open a lot of career doors later on if you go to a really prestigious college and you're mixing with other students who come from families that are very well connected. But also the instructors may have a lot of connections. For example, when Amy went to UCLA, one of her instructors had a connection and was able to get her an internship in the White House. That's never going to happen if you don't go to college. So that's really nice. You'll have the opportunity to hopefully meet some nice people that you want to date and get to know, which is a really good thing. And if you go to community college, you're not even spending a lot of money. And then you have the opportunity to live at home and save your money. And for people who may want to transfer into a four-year college, sometimes you have a better chance of getting into the four-year college if you've done the community college, particularly if your high school grades were not stellar. You were not a 4.2 or 4.4 student these days. A's are not enough. So you can save money, and if you do well in the community college, you have a really good chance getting into the college that you want to. And the teaching is so much better in community colleges because all the instructors are promoted because of their teaching, not because of their research. If you go to a regular four-year college, you're going to have a lot of instructors whose focus is some narrow portion of their subject matter, and the introduction to their subject is so beneath them that they don't necessarily do a very good job of teaching it. So there are lots of good reasons to go to college.
I thought that was terrific, Barbara. That was just great.
Thank you.
I know your debating partner's not supposed to say that, but I really think you did a very good job.
Well, no, because we're not voting on our debating partners.
I know, but, right, true. But anyway, I think you did a great job. Okay, so now I will try to take on the Herculean task of making the case for why college is not so smart. Well, first of all, you know, you spoke about you can learn things about philosophy and whatever, and that sounds great in the abstract, but I really wish that I had brought the textbook. I gave a talk yesterday at the Saratoga Library called Harvard Schmarvard, New Perspectives on College, and I brought four college textbooks, and I had the people in the audience open the book to or page at random and simply read aloud what the first words are, and they are so abstract, so things that nobody will ever, let alone remember, let alone use, even remember or have any relevance. So we romanticize the idea of how much this academic learning is going to help you grow, and we forget what it's really like. And of course, the college's websites and brochures and tour guides, they speak also in these broad brush terms that make this academic learning seem far more enlightening. And of course, there is, you know, this is all rhetoric. There is the definitive study that was done on how much learning accrues in that most central of all skills that you're supposed to acquire in college, that is critical thinking skills. And it's called Academically Adrift, and it found that 36% of all students who started at four-year colleges, not even community colleges, grew zero, not at all, in their critical thinking skills.
That's pretty scary.
45% grew, quote, very little. And by the way, dear listeners, anything, you know, it's not good radio for me to give citations here, but I am pretty assiduous in preparing for these shows. So if you want the citations, you can simply email me and I will promise to send you the citations for everything asserted here in this show. I'll just give out my email address for those of you who think you might want that. It's M Nemko, M as in Mary, and then my last name, Nemko, N-E-M-K-O, mnemko at comcast.net. All right, I will continue. But of course, many people don't go to college or graduate school just for the learning. They go for the career. I was shocked recently to see a research article that found that people who do kind of psychological helping counseling, who were trained merely as paraprofessionals, did as well and has had as good outcomes with their patients as PhDs. What does that say about how much value our education provides on the career front? And of course, most of the teaching at colleges and universities are taught by people who have opted out of the real world. There is, yes, the occasional instructor who's had real world experience, but most of them are theoreticians. As you said, Barbara, especially at the four-year colleges, which I'll say explain later that they're not four-year colleges, most of them have a very little field, or they're certainly not masters at real world experience. They're academicians. They're theoreticians. They get hired and hired, not just promoted, hired based on how much research they do. They're not the best at training people to be practitioners. So, you know, Amy, you mentioned Amy, who not only worked in the White House but ended up going to Yale Law School, perhaps the most prestigious law school in America. And afterwards, when she applied, she was offered a job at Supreme Court Justice Lewis Powell's law firm. And they have a 2-year training program at that law firm to track, because they know that the training they get in law school is theoretical and abstract, especially at the prestigious law schools, because law schools and all universities get their prestige based on how much research they've cranked out, not how good their undergraduate teaching is. So the talk about getting trained for your career at a university or in graduate school is really ill-advised, and may be well-advised to do your career training with just the minimum degree possible. And of course, yes, there are some employers who only hire you with a degree, but doing most of it through one-on-one mentorships, apprenticeships, reading on your own, short-term workshops that are offered by the professional association, trained by the master people, not at universities. Another, I alluded to just moments ago, a disadvantage of going to college is simply the graduation rate. They don't like to talk about this little nifty fact. Fewer than half of all students nationwide who start as freshmen at four-year colleges graduate in 4 years. And in fact, only 55% graduate even if given 6 years. And I asked the senior statistician at the Department of U.S. Department of Education, Clifford Adelman, to talk about that. The new pool of graduates, we now take more and more students into college because it's the media likes to portray that college is an absolute essential, and the government is giving more and more financial aid to the poor and to formerly low achievers. And they found that if you graduated in the bottom 40% of your high school class, your chances of graduating, even if given 8.5 years, is less than 25%. So you're very unlikely to graduate unless you really are a superstar anyway. And then even if you graduate, what about the employment? What they all say is that indeed, you know, employers are going to require a job, a college degree, and indeed many do, especially in government. And frankly, in large companies, they treat a degree as a screen. But The Atlantic, certainly the prestigious Atlantic, reported in 2012, after the so-called recession, that 53% of college graduates under 25 were doing work they could have gotten straight out of high school. Now, of course, it varies with the major. If you have the ability and the motivation to complete a difficult engineering or computer science degree, of course, your employment prospects are a lot better. But if you majored in more typical things like sociology, gender studies, or art, God knows your employment prospects are terrible. And finally, I want to say we need to talk about not is college worth it, but is college or graduate school worth it relative to the opportunity cost, what you could otherwise do with the truly $300,000 4-year, not just 5 or 6 year, sticker price of a brand name private college, and the $150,000 sticker price when you count everything at a UC. Think of what you could do with that $150,000 to $300,000. And of course, there is financial aid, but most of the financial aid, unless you're really dirt poor, unless you're a superstar, tends to be loan that has to be paid back. And loans that colleges give out are, because of the very powerful lobby that higher education is, has enabled them to say, if we lend you money, you can't even discharge it in bankruptcy. Almost any other kind of loan can be discharged in bankruptcy, not a student loan. So what could you be doing with all that money and time? Certainly it could buy you a hell of a lot of one-on-one mentoring, tutoring, apprenticeships, etc. It could buy you a house, which would then free you up to do careers that you otherwise couldn't afford to do, like the arts, like writing, like entertainment. Those are wonderful careers. People would wish, love to be able to do that, but they can't afford it because they got all this non-dischargeable college and graduation debt. And now think about all the 4, 5, 6, or 8 years you're spending in college, sitting your butt, learning some of this abstract, abstruse stuff. Is that really the best use of your time and money? Think of what you could do with your time. And I think I'll stop there.
Wow.
Okay. So those are my best shot at arguments against college. Now we switch, as I said, for those listeners just joining us, we're doing one of our switch sides in the middle debate here on Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco on the question of, is it worth going to college or graduate school or not? And we started with Barbara making the case, I think she did very well, for why one should, and I'd made the best case I could for why we shouldn't. Now we're switch sides in the middle. And I'm going to make the arguments for why, indeed, one should go to college or graduate school. And then Barbara will have the last word and give on the arguments for why it's not. And then, my dear listeners, we will go to you and invite you to weigh in either with your comments about whether you think college or graduate school is worth it and under what circumstances, and any questions you might have for Barbara and me. So that's our little agenda. So now I'm going to try to do the best I can to make the arguments in favor of going to college or graduate school. Of course, while the averages don't make colleges look great in terms of either the learning or the career, the motivated and capable student can learn a lot in and outside the classroom if he or she makes the most of the experience, and that can be at a community college, at a San Francisco State, or at a Harvard. Even if even though the professors tend to be very academically oriented, there's a wide range of professors. Some are brilliantly transformative and love mentoring students. If you do go to office hours and ask for advice and really engage with the professor on the issues of the day or issues that are universal, you can learn so much. And in class, if you don't just, you know, not show up and just read the cliff notes hire somebody to take your exam for you and don't read the stuff, if you really decide to immerse yourself, you have your whole life to be practical. College allows you the time to think the larger thoughts and really grapple with those. You can, if you're smart and motivated, you can learn a lot in the classroom and outside. As Barbara had mentioned earlier, the extracurricular opportunities are endless. Where else are you going to have a chance to do all of the above? Be in student government, being a leader, working for the student newspaper or the radio station. Where else can you join a club, start a club? Where can you be an activist? You can do all of, where can you join the student orchestra or the chorus or act in plays? What a rich environment to grow. Even if you're in graduate school, those are opportunities for you as well. What a wonderful place. What a hotbed of opportunity the college campus is. Not to mention, they may be the most beautiful place you will ever spend time. College campuses are gorgeous. They're fabulous places. And being around other people interested in learning, what a great place to spend your time. You can also, as Barbara did say, you can learn about the big issues you'll not get outside the ivory tower. When you're employed, nobody's going to care that much about your interest in philosophy. What is the meaning of life? But you can and do at college. What about appreciation of arts? Barbara gave a great example. She didn't know anything about classical music, but what a great opportunity to learn. You know, and today's colleges don't just teach classical. You learn about every genre from the Baroque to hip-hop. That helps you be a wiser connoisseur of life. Right. What about the fact, instead of being lofty, I'll get practical. The reality is that many employers require a degree. That's it. No nonsense. They screen out anybody who doesn't have a degree. So that opens many more career options for you. And if it is a design, if you do go to a designer label, I've denigrated those designer label institutions like Berkeley and Stanford, need all UCs because they're so research-centric and not the best at teaching, and they cram students into large classes in a lecture. That's not the way to transform people. But still, it does certainly. Having that designer label diploma opens a lot of career doors. Oh, you went to Stanford. Oh, Harvard. Oh, Berkeley. It opens career doors. It also opens or personal doors. We reduce people to sound bites. Oh, this is a Harvard graduate. This is a Stanford graduate. That'll help you meet romantic partners simply by virtue of where you went to school. And there, as Barbara intelligently, wisely said, you can meet you're much more likely to meet a great romantic partner there, not just because they're brighter and more motivated than those who don't go to college, but it provides, unlike a bar or whatever, an ongoing opportunity to meet them class after class. Classes are 15 weeks long. You can sit next to him or her the first week and literally make a little comment, and little by little you get to see what they're really like. What a great place to meet not just romantic partners, but also, as Barbara said very intelligently, friends. Really good friends. And because, as Barbara said, you share the same experience for so many years with people, they're likely, and it can be an intense experience, you're likely to make lifetime friends. Now, at the risk of, I've been kind of high and mighty, but let's not forget about fun. It's fun to be a college or graduate student. You're on the taking end. There are people trying to give you education. People are trying to offer you extracurriculars of all sorts, not just the lofty kind, but yeah, all right, to sit until 2 in the morning and drinking maybe a little bit too much, or smoking a joint with somebody and talking about the meaning of life, and yeah, having sex is not a bad thing. It's fun. And all you need to do is show up, especially if the parents are paying or the taxpayer is paying or you're independently wealthy. And community college, unarguably, is an amazing deal. You've not only do you've got teachers, a wide range of teachers who are trained, hired specifically because they are good teachers. Of course, you can get a crappy teacher anywhere, but for $12 a unit, which is next to nothing, you can get these really good teachers, and they have, even at community colleges, have all these extracurriculars. They have radio stations. They have theater. They have activism. They have everything. They have sports. I did left out sports. I played baseball in college for 4 years. I sucked, but I felt great being part of that team, just wearing the uniform. And I have some great memories. I was out in the outfield, and I threw out at, we were playing Army at Queens College, and I threw out the runner at the plate, and that enabled us to win the game. As shallow as that sounds emotionally, that is a lovely memory, and that's my best case for why college, and indeed graduate school, can be worth it. Barbara, you get the last word. Make the arguments for why you think college, graduate school, is not a wise idea in general.
Well, I think the debt is so substantial these days that it's daunting. I am afraid that young people today are coming away from the college experience owing $100,000.
Or more.
Or more, and not able to get a job that even begins to help them pay off that debt. And so they're having a problem with just basic living. They can't afford an apartment, a car, on a job that's going to pay them not very much.
Annie
is a great example.
I know. I have to intersect one thing, because you just brought up the cover story of that most respected publications, Consumer Reports, the August 2016 issues, is solid red with the headline, quote, "I kind of ruined my life by going to college." And underneath it said, so many students have $130,000 in debt, $100,000 in debt. This is not something abstract. These are human beings whose lives and whose parents' lives and their financial security is totally saddled, and they're unable to get a job. Okay, I couldn't help but interrupt. Please, I won't interrupt again, I promise. Continue.
Thank you. I feel really sorry for these kids, because they just don't see a future, and that's crazy. And I was thinking of Annie, our niece, who went to the University of Michigan and got a degree in teaching, and teaching wanted to pay her $40,000 a year, and her debt was huge. So she ended up becoming a personal trainer. She didn't need to go to college for that. As a personal trainer, because she's very entrepreneurial, not only did she make a great living working for somebody, after doing that for a couple of years, she went out on her own. She opened a place in Chicago. She's doing so well, she had opened a bigger place. Now she's thinking of a yet still bigger place. So sometimes it seems that you can have a far better life if you're not saddled with that crazy debt that you got in college. Another thing that I think about that absolutely terrifies me today is when we went to college, we truly did debate. There were both sides of all issues, and you talked about stuff. Political correctness today has changed that. And we have this protectionist attitude about our young people. They have to have safe spaces, and they can't hear any idea that's different from their ideas. And if they do, they have a right to complain and say that the professor said something and it upset me, and I wasn't warned that I was going to read something. This is not why I would want to send a kid to college today. I'd want to keep them as far away as possible. that's not the real world. And for the rest of your life, that people aren't going to coddle you. So I think we've made a mistake and gone way overboard in what's happening at colleges. Plus, of course, I don't want my child to think that it's perfectly fine to have drunken sex all the time because that's what everybody else is doing, or using drugs or whatever. Then it doesn't seem like a healthy place to send your child in college. And frankly, yes, it was wonderful to learn all about music, but I was bored with a lot of the academics, and ask me a question about 98% of the stuff that I learned, I don't remember. It wasn't relevant. And even in graduate school, getting my doctorate at Berkeley, and I'm really hoping that they have fixed it in the year since I've been out, which is a long time, but it was not relevant to the real world. So here I took the most practical degree I could think of in graduate school, which was the evaluation of school programs. And when I graduated with all of this, six statistical courses behind me, and I went to work for the California Department of Education on a contract, we sent them an evaluation design that included good statistical analysis. And they came back and said, what, are you crazy? You can't randomly assign kids in school to an experimental or a control group. If you have some new experiment with some new program, everybody has to have it. You can't say, these kids aren't getting it because I'm doing an experiment. That was cold water on my face. It was a rude awakening that in the real world, they didn't care about all our theoretical and statistical models. They wanted to know what percent of kids did better. That end of story. That was their statistical design. So why did I struggle through all of those very difficult, very challenging courses for something that I could never use in the real world? I think it's also... I think we give kids a sense of false confidence these days that pretty much, as long as it's politically correct, anything you say is wonderful and brilliant and fabulous. And I think young people are learning that as long as you say it loud, if you're really loud about it, then people will say, oh, isn't he or she brave and fabulous in saying this? And we always talk about candid conversations. We never have a candid conversation. A candid conversation is saying loudly something that's politically correct. That's not what I want young people to learn. And then, of course, you know, you don't learn a whole lot of stuff. You owe a fortune, and you may not even graduate. So by the time you have done all that, you don't even have the degree. So I think if you had asked me this question 10 years ago, I would have really glommed on to all the positives about going to college. Today, I think I don't feel that way. I think it's a negative effect on kids in the social, the emotional, and the learning dimensions.
Terrific. I think now we can go out of our roles, because we took these roles and then switched. Are there any points that you would like to make on either side, either in favor of going to college or graduate school, or against, that you'd like to make? I have a few, but I'd like to give you the first opportunity.
Well, let me start with one.
Go ahead.
I think if you know what you want to do, and you can find a program that is directly focused on what you want to do, that has a good high graduation rate and a good rate of being hired into the profession that you're interested in, it makes sense. And I thought it was interesting. The other night we were with somebody, a young lady who's graduating from high school,
right,
and wants to go to cosmetology school. And her grandparents, who she lives with, were planning to send her to a private cosmetology school, and the cost was about $24,000. They had no idea that there are a couple of community colleges that offer that program at $12 a unit. So if you do your homework, and it might even be worthwhile, and this is not a plug for people to come and see you as a college counselor, but there are college counselors there, and for the initial investment, if you can save of that $24,000, if you're going to save $20,000 by finding the program that you want at a low-cost community college, that's a deal, but you need to do your homework. So if it's really targeted, I think it is good to go to college.
Anything else you want to say?
No, I think I kind of, that's where I am today.
I've got a number of points I do want to make, and then we're going to go to the phones. First of all, you know, I want to give a shout out to the 99ers. We forget them. It seems like ancient history. But you remember that the 99ers were complaining about two things. Yes, they were complaining about concentration of wealth, but a major part of the 99ers' protests were about the unconscionable prices that the colleges charge and that the fact that they have all this loan that cannot be discharged with bankruptcy. So, you know, the Bay Area was perhaps the epicenter of the 99er movement, and I want to remind you that this is consonant with our concerns about college and graduate school are consonant with the 99er movement. Additionally, a few points. You know, you talked about the false confidence that people can get. You know, they feel like, oh, if I can just say it, that's great. And you're right that there's the opposite effect, too. There are many students who maybe didn't go to the most demanding high school, and they've gotten good grades because of grade inflation. But then they get to college. And depending upon the college, except, you know, at the really, you know, there are certainly some easy college classes, and certainly at the community colleges there are some. But when you are confronted with the realities of what are in those college biology, economics, even those introductory textbooks, and you don't understand it at all, and you don't understand even the first weeks of lecture, all of a sudden your self-esteem is in the toilet, and for not a good reason. You mentioned, Barbara, the statistics courses. Yes, we both took five-unit graduate-level statistics courses. There is no faster way to destroy your self-esteem. You feel like a loser. I got A's in all of them, and so did you, I believe. But how terrifying the whole thing was, how scary. For what? To learn information you don't even learn. So many students either graduate or don't graduate with a case of the imposter syndrome. They feel like, I don't know anything, or I only learned this theoretical stuff, but it's useless in the real world. Or this inflated sense of confidence because they're told that there are no really rights and wrongs. It's only a matter of perspective. Be an activist. You know, so there's huge negative effects on your self-esteem and emotional well-being. In terms of bias.
Good point.
I read a study. This is a 2000, and again, dear listeners, again, anything I've said or Barbara has said here that is a citation of a study, it's not good radio to talk about the citations, but I will be happy to email you the support for every single contention that was made that, you know, that was not obviously opinion. Just email me at mnemko@comcast.net, mnemko@comcast.net. Regarding a couple of them, regarding bias, a 2014 study by a professor of political science at Sarah Lawrence, who is certainly a liberal institution, found that in the New England, he focused only on the New England states, the ratio of liberal to conservative professors was, guess, how many liberal professors do you think there are in all the New England colleges for every conservative? What do you think the ratio is?
85 to 1.
How about, well, that's even more. No, 28 to 1. There were 28 liberal professors. 28 liberal. 28 liberal professors for every one conservative. And here's the punchline. It was up from just 5 to 1 in 1989, from 5 to 1 to 28 to 1. So the acceleration in the bias of universities in one direction has dramatically accelerated. That kind of truth is not going to be found on the college's website or the brochures or the guided tours. The other thing is, you talked about the fact, Barbara, that when people I am specifically talking about young adults who are away from home for the first time, and they're lifting together three or four to a room, because again, colleges don't really care, so they do it, they put kids together in the most cost-effective way, and there's minimal supervision. And with those kids away for the first time, it is very fertile ground for substance abuse. And here's the statistic that I wanted to talk about. Even though colleges are generally, on average, brighter and better adjusted than the pool of non-college-bound kids, the National Institute of Drug Abuse reports that a higher percentage of college students than non-college students binge drink and get drunk. So it is that you know, you would think the colleges, you know, the way the colleges perpetrate their image is, oh, it's a hothouse of growth and connections and whatever. But actually, that hothouse makes it more likely to binge drink and get drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Graduation rates. I talked about some of this. I'm going to leave that out. I don't want to go on to too great length. I think I should and will stop there. Okay, now. I invite listeners to call and either weigh in with an opinion about and it's not black or white, when is probably the right word. When is going to college and or graduate school wise? When isn't it? Maybe your own personal experience or your question for Barbara or me about whether you or someone you care about should be going to college or graduate school, whether it be for the first time or re-enrolling. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And no sooner do I give out the number, the lines are lighting up. Let's go right back. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you. Are you there? Or have you left us? Hi.
Oh, is it me?
It is you.
Yay. Gosh, I called in, and this is a perfect topic because this is really the focus of my quandary. My intention is to get as many of the pros and reduce the cons.
Yes.
That's my intention.
Okay.
And the other factor that I want to put out to both of you is that I'm in my 60s trying to start my life from scratch, and I'm using college as the way to move out of disability and poverty, because I don't really know any other way to do that except to put myself in a community and an environment where I can be intellectually stimulated and have all those resources that you brought out, like clubs and memberships and art and all of that. So for me at my age, I feel like this is the vortex of opportunity, including, which Barbara was talking about earlier, about the positives of networking, where one is in touch with the resource of the professors and the experts who have connections that can lead you to possible jobs. Now, I want to add to that the what's being required as I'm applying for scholarships and whatnot are volunteer work, the kind of community service that you're putting out there. And I'm trying to create a life to blend both my past experience and my volunteer community service with the right master's program. And where I'm stuck, and this is where I'd love both of your input, is I'm purposefully trying to cultivate my character. That's what you were, that was brought up earlier. It's a great way to develop character with a combination of intellect and social and cultural activities. So for me, I'm trying to figure out if there is one field that would allow me to exercise my best qualities, which have to do, right now I've got them divvied up into four master's programs, which it frustrates me. Counseling program brings out the pensive, deep thinking, helping people type of me, the meditator, the really good listener, being with the client. The communication masters brings out the charismatic, extroverted, really communicative, really fun to be with, you know, the presentational, you know, the motivational speaker type person that I am. My grammar is a little challenged because I'm a little nervous.
Mm-hmm,
and then the criminal justice or other fields that bring out my social justice advocacy part that's insistent that on having to build a better place to live is that the people, you know, I've explored these fields. And then the recreation masters brings out the playful, lighthearted person who wants to play in nature. So I'm concerned because my personality is actually morphing, and I want to put myself in the right place. Even though I'm in my 60s, I feel very much like I'm kind of in my 20s and like maybe elementary school, where my personality is developing on a new level now. And
okay, I'm going to interrupt you. I've got it because for interest of time. I'm going to take a first shot at this. I think you should not go to a master's program. You're in your 60s. You've got a disability of some sort. The fact that your likelihood of getting of that money that is, would cost you, no matter how much scholar, you're going to be getting a lot of loan and you're going to be paying money out of cash. You should, in my judgment, take one course that is very carefully selected, whether it be online or in person, that will improve your counseling and coaching skills. You should simultaneously, and once you're, if it's in, let's say on a community college campus, certainly you can get, just by just enrolling in one class, you're able to get involved in any of the extracurriculars you like. You also, given you say you sounds like criminal justice, and you should be volunteering to be doing some coaching, volunteer coaching at San Quentin or Santa Rita or whatever local prison, so you're getting both real world experience and building the connections with an employer there, so they see, wow, this woman is great, we're going to hire her. That in a nutshell is what I think you should do. What do you think?
What about, well, I like the idea of, I'm a little confused about taking one class, because I feel like part of my struggle is to get to know as many professors as possible.
Mistake. No, you won't get to know them. You're going to be one of many students in a class, and being in your SIG, you're putting too much credence in the value of knowing those professors. Remember, even in the master's level, mainly they care about their research. Faculty member, especially if teaching graduate students, they're not, it's too unlikely that the time you would, and money you would spend in getting that master's degree, and believe me, men or women in their 60s who start a master's program, who have not been in school for a while, could take you 5 years to complete it. And then, you know, it just doesn't make logical sense. In general, you're more likely to make those connections by spending one day a week volunteering at San Quentin, another at some other at a halfway house, and being awesome at that, and taking the one course in counseling or coaching skills. Maybe if you're really thorough, what I would urge you to do is there must be a course in counseling offenders. That's the course you should be taking, so it's on target. And that would give you really relevant skills which you could apply right away in your volunteer work. And then, because you're so good at it now, it's your natural tendencies, it's your values, you will have had this course that you're simultaneously taking, you're maximizing your chances of getting hired. Does that make sense? And I know you want to develop as a human being, so fine. So take one course at a community college that's most on target, and then do whatever extracurriculars you want. I'm sure there are, believe me, in the Bay Area, there are prisoners. There's more prisoners' rights than non-prisoner rights groups. Get involved. Go to meetups. Become an activist. Start a prisoner rights club on the community college campus. That's what you should be doing. Does that make sense?
I love the forget the master's because it's not worth the debt. And I love
the time.
And the encouragement to do volunteer work to make the most of the skills I already have. Wouldn't not having a degree jeopardize the maximum?
Yes, but that's but you have you can't think
that
of,
I would be making.
Yes, but you can't think that way, because you have to think about what is the opportunity cost, the 3 to 5 years it'll take you to get a master's if you're like most people who are older, and the cost is so enormous relative to the benefits, employability-wise and practical learning-wise, that you would get from doing these multiple volunteer activities and working your way up. Does that make sense?
Well, what about a master's in education?
No.
It would only be a year.
No. It's a year in theory. But most people in reality who end up who are older, you could be different. But especially when you say you're poverty and disabled, you know, I am not saying that that year and a third, by the way, a master's in education is a year and a third, and then you would need an additional, there's a credential program. It's too much. It doesn't feel, you could be the exception, but in general, we have to play the probabilities. Barbara Nemko, I'd like you to weigh in now.
Well, I was coming at it a little bit differently. I love the idea of community college, and they do have fabulous criminal justice programs.
Yep.
And I'm thinking that by enrolling at the community college, you now have all of the employment services that the community college offers. So you have the opportunity to talk with faculty in the criminal justice program and find somebody who may be able to advise you in terms of which courses might be the best to take. You start with one, but they're not terribly expensive, so you have the opportunity to continue with that, and you might be able to be working and doing that at the same time. And in terms of volunteering, there are lots of jobs in criminal justice that relate to youthful offenders. You don't necessarily have to go into the prisons. If you want to find some kids to counsel, we have them in juvenile hall. We have them, they've been expelled, they've been, they've done something, and they may be young enough that you really can straighten them out and give them some critical job skills for, or life skills for the future. and that might be somewhat more rewarding and less intimidating than walking into a prison to do this. Mm-hmm. You can go onto a school campus or volunteer with the juvenile probation department who supervises the kids who have committed some kind of a crime and are on probation. So I think, given that you're interested in education and we're considering an education master's degree, I'd rather see you volunteer in education and get some of the skills in the community college criminal justice program while taking advantage of all the resources, counseling resources, as well as employment resources that the community college offers.
Makes great sense to me. Caller, what do you think?
Thank you. I'm going to sit with both of your advice. I love both of you being on the show and the debate format.
Yeah, so it's a good format. Yeah,
it's excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, and good luck to you.
Yep, great.
Thank you.
All our lines are lighted up. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
All right. Hang on. You guys are usually dead on, but I have to disagree with you. Going to college should be the presumption or the assumption until proven otherwise. If you're between the ages of 15 and 25, you got to go to college, and unless you have some sort of learning disability, something to prove that you shouldn't go otherwise. And I'm surprised to hear you say anything other than that.
Okay, and we've talked about a lot of reasons for doing it and not doing it. What's your core reason why it should be the presumptive option?
It should be the presumptive option because 99 times out of 100, I can tell if somebody's gone to college or not, and I'm in the corporate world. I can tell if they've gone to college or not by their decision-making, their thought process, and I have much more of a preference to work with somebody that's gone to college than without.
You're right on average, but you've got a correlation causation problem. The evidence on how much college does to enhance one's thinking skills is really very negative. As I said, the definitive study of 100 different colleges called Academically Adrift, put out by the University of Chicago, found that for 45% or 36% of all college graduates, there was zero growth in critical thinking skills. The issue is that because the meme of you must go to college is so pervasive that really only the weaker, let's just say the intellectually weakest people don't go. But if you take somebody who could have gotten into a college and says, you know, I'm going to do my learning outside, self-study, mentorships, short courses, whatever, and I'm going to document it, and I'm going to write applications to a job that say I made a conscious decision that I would develop more by doing my learning outside of this highly structured, academically intellectual, theoretical environment, those people, at least in my career counseling practice, get hired above students who have college degrees and actually learn more of practical relevance than being force-fed material they don't want to learn. Do you have a response to that?
Yes, I do. And I think what you're saying is accurate, but I think you're talking about a very small minority.
That's correct.
Are going to be able to navigate their way through that. My last comment is, a college degree, nobody can ever take it away from you. And there aren't very many things in life that you can say that about.
It's true, but you know, in 1970, only 40% of students went to college. So it was a rare and valued commodity. To these days, 70% go, and many more go to graduate school, and a high percentage go to graduate school. So, yes, it's permanent, but it's a permanent piece of paper that, a dollar is worth less and less every year because it's so pervasive. It's now viewed as a hunting license for getting a job. It's far from this prestigious thing. And with grade inflation, even graduating cum laude doesn't mean a whole lot. Because the average GPA in college is 3.26. The average. That means 50% of students get a 3.26 or higher. It's not the same as the old days. Barbara, do you want anything, or should we go to the next call?
Well, the only thing I would add, I agree with the caller that it does take a unique individual who's got the skills to navigate through life the way we're talking about. But last year, I may have said this on the air at some previous show, but I attended a conference, and it was education and business people. And I attended several business panels, and I was astounded to hear employer after employer say the same thing in the same language. I'm not interested in what degrees people have. I want to hire someone who can do shit. And I know I'm not allowed to say that on the air, but that's a quote. And that's what that was the pervasive feeling coming from the employers, that apparently they're getting so many young people who have college degrees who are not self-starters, who don't understand how to figure out what the problem is and then solve it, who wait to be told what to do, that they're not interested in those people. They want people who get it and who can do stuff, who have skills. And I think what we're going to see in the future is that badging or micro-credentials, as they call them, are going to be more important, that you'll have to show not that you have a diploma, which doesn't mean anything, but that you have specific skills that are valued by employers.
Before I go, Barbara, that didn't really argue against the caller's point. The caller said college. He didn't specify a major. Well, you're saying that these employers are universally saying, we don't care so much about degrees anymore? Or are they saying,
yes,
we don't care about the major?
That's what they were saying at the... Yes. Okay. That, it astounded me because I had not heard that before.
Right. We have all the lines lighted up, so caller, thank you very much for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi. Yes, it is you.
Hi. Thank you. Sorry. My name is Amy. I was just calling to give a quick plug for UC Extension.
Oh, I love it.
I'm in my mid-50s and had to make a career change, and am in the, toward the finishing stages of completing a certificate. And when I looked into graduate school, this is going to be about $4,000,
right,
for a certificate, which is, right, in a sense, almost equivalent to a graduate degree. And it's, as they say in the promos, it's from UC Extension, and when you turn in your transcripts, it says UC on it. And the real benefits for me is that the courses are at nights and on weekends. The professors treat you as colleagues. And there are so many conferences, and every course, our final project is something, some sort of project or presentation that is something that you could use professionally.
Amy, I couldn't agree more. UC Extension is one of the great treasures because it is very, the professors are not professors. They're master practitioners generally, mm-hmm, especially in the career programs. They are highly focused. The networking of the people who go are, the students are usually very, you know, well-motivated and smart people who are very good to network with. It's easy to get in. It's not like UC Berkeley, yet it does show, mm-hmm, UC Berkeley on your diploma. I love, and I'm not just saying this, I am honored that UC Berkeley Extension, they do what's called a public lecture, I think just one a year or a couple a year, and they invite, mm-hmm, anybody from the public to watch, and they've asked me, 3 years ago I did one, the public lecture for them, and I'm doing it again, they've asked me back to do it again this fall. I really believe in UC Extension, and also San Francisco State, you know, mm-hmm, extensions are great and underrated, so I am thrilled that you called. Thanks very much for calling Work with Marty and Barbara. Let's go take more calls. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What's on your mind?
Hi, I wanted to, first of all, I loved what you said to the woman that was going to go back to school, and she's 60. And
in her 60s, she's not, when somebody says you're in her 60s, it usually means she's in her upper 60s. I didn't want to press that, but there's code, so I figured she was like 67 or something, right?
Yeah. Well, City College is free as long as she's, yep, a San Francisco resident.
Yep.
And Haywood State has an over 60 program, mm, where everything is waived except for a $4 fee if she's,
wow,
going to commute.
By the way, it's not called Haywood anymore. It's called Cal State University, yeah, East Bay. Continue.
Exactly. And I did that program through, mm, San Francisco State when it was offered.
Wow.
When I was over 60 to get my master's in math education. And it was terrific. But, I mean, it was not a one-year program. It,
right,
was, you know, a year and a half plus my field study with the, you know, 75-page paper, so it was not a year. It was not even a year and a third. It was quite a bit of time and quite a bit of effort.
Well, I thank you very much for the call.
Wonderful call.
Yeah.
Today. I can't believe it.
We usually do. I love, you know, I am not the cheeriest person in life, but when I get drive in to knowing coming on KELW, I'm always pumped up, both about the opportunity to talk to my listeners, but also to listen to them. We have 5 minutes left. I'm going to give you a couple of choices. Did you want to say anything else about any aspect of going to college or graduate school, maybe older people going back to college, graduate school? Anything you want to say, you want me to talk? I know you hate when I ask you that open-ended question.
If you're going back to school, unless you're independently wealthy and you just want to get knowledge for knowledge's sake, you really need to be focused these days on what it is that you plan to do with this knowledge. If you want to turn it into something employable, I think you need to start with the employers and get a good sense from them on what they're looking for. I love the extension program because to me that's kind of in the realm of badges or micro-credentials, mm-hmm, where you're learning specific things that employers have deemed important, and they're the people teaching the classes.
So it's not theoretical, it's practical, and they're telling you what they're going to look for. So that would be what I'd like to add.
What I'd like to add is we've been guilty of focusing too much on white-collar jobs. The reality is because of this Everyone to College press and this long-standing belief that blue-collar workers are inferior, second-class citizens, there are really, you know, there are good quality blue-collar jobs that go wanting, from hair cutter to electromechanical tech who's repairing elevators or MRI machines or whatever, to chefs, to welders, and there are to surveyors. And there are apprenticeship programs that are done as a combination of one-on-one mentorship on the job as well as with the community college that enable you to have these non-offshoreable jobs. So I do encourage people who are looking for alternatives to college. It's not good for us just to talk about the pros and cons of college and graduate school, but to propose alternatives. So one alternative is apprenticeships. And calapprenticeships.org has a long list of the kind of apprenticeships that exist. Also, I know there's a tremendous anti-military bias in the Bay Area, but indeed the military is an excellent option for some people, especially people who could use more structure in their life. And the laissez-faire attitude in most colleges would be too unstructured for them. And in fact, the quality of teaching that goes on and that is career-related is outstanding in the military. I would never personally go to the military. I couldn't stand basic training. I couldn't stand all of that. But many people really do benefit from that, who have come into the military both aimless, irresponsible, etc., and they come out with a career. And what's beautiful is the military offers the GI Bill, offers essentially all of 3 years of tuition for college paid for by the military, so that what you learned in the in the military on the job training can be supplemented by academic training if that's what you want. I really think, and I also believe, that notwithstanding the bombing of Syria and Afghanistan, the ISIS caves, that I think we are less likely, and I only have a crystal ball, and he who eats by the crystal ball eats broken glass, my belief is that we're less likely to send large numbers of troops into harm's way. And so if you sign up for the military, you're less likely to be shipped off to some godforsaken place to get your head blown off. So I think for some people, the military is an option, and I want to capstone all this with that on-the-job training doesn't get discussed very much. I really believe that the ultimate, that ethical entrepreneurship is one of the most important careers one could have. And the best way to learn how to be an ethical entrepreneur is not an MBA program, but finding somebody, family or friend or whatever, who is a successful and ethical a small business owner, working along with them, even if it's just to get their coffee, will teach you a tremendous amount about how to become self-employed, which is the ultimate guarantor of not getting your job outsourced, automated, or offshored. Barbara, we have 30 seconds left, or 15 seconds. What's your last comment?
Even the high schools now are starting to realize that we have to offer alternatives and are having career fairs with union people, different unions that offer apprenticeships. Because those apprenticeships are a wonderful way. They will even pay for your college.
Great.
That's what you choose to do. But they'll train you, and then you are guaranteed of getting a good job.
Barbara, thank you very much, as usual, for being my excellent debater, debating both sides of the issue. When is college graduate school or graduate school worth it? I also want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr. And, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11 for Work with Marty Nemko. I'll do workovers on callers, and I will talk with Paul Zolo, author of Songwriters on Songwriting. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko for Barbara Nemko, reminding you, we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.